Happy Memorial Day weekend. Fun episode coming today. John and I are going to break down the free agent market, not only give our top five at each position, but also talk about who potential suitors might be and how much money we see these players getting. Obviously, that is a fraught exercise here, given that we don't know what the economic situation is really going to be yet, but still worth giving it a shot so far. Before we get started, I want to remind you we're brought to you today by Built Bar, a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On, the name of this podcast network, Locked On, and you'll get $10 off your first order. So start big or start small here?
Let's start big. I think the free agent bigs are a little more interesting.
Absolutely. So who is your, and I guess we could talk first of when you're talking about ranking these players, I kind of think of it as who I would want to give the most guaranteed money to. That's kind of how I think about ranking these players. And that's going to be a function of how good the player is now, but also, of course, of age and projected performance going forward. And also just how many different suitors they might have, how many different places they can fit in. So is that kind of how you think about it as well? Or do you have a different philosophy?
Well, basically, I mean, the one thing is when you get into some of these older players, you might say, I might like this guy more on a 1 year deal, but if I'm giving out 3-4 years, then I would definitely prefer this 25-year-old guy ahead of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course, the number of 25-year-old guys who are available as unrestricted free agents, relatively minimal here, as we'll, of course, talk about. So give me your number one free agent center.
Yeah, I think it has to be Montrezl Harrell from the Clippers. I know he doesn't fit in neatly as like people's idea of a starting center necessarily, because he's a little undersized. He's not a shooter. There's some defensive questions, but his motor just runs so hot. He's such a good finisher. He's so good playing it, you know, in pick and roll, whether it's short roll or rim running or even, you know, beasting against a switch occasionally, runs the floor. He just does so many things to help you win, especially at the offensive end, that I think he has to be the number one guy.
Interesting. All right. I have him much further down. And part of my reason for that is just that I think he's a good guy to boost your offense, I think, on a bad team. Like, he, despite the fact that he's played on the Clippers, who have been good the whole time he's been there, mm-hmm. I think he fits much better on a bad team because of his defensive deficiencies, and he can really boost your offense in that sixth man role. The reason I have other players ahead of him is I don't think he's going to be the focus of as many teams, even if you might argue that on a bad team, he might make more of a difference than some of the guys that I have above him. I have more of your traditional two-way center types above
okay.
him.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, why don't we run through the rest of your list, and I can just react to them. I mean, you can kind of drive it in terms of the rankings, and I'll just say when I disagree. But okay. let's just talk about Harrell first, I guess. Who would be in the market for him outside of course, just simply returning to the Clippers?
So I do think a return to the Clippers is probably in the cards for him. I look at Charlotte as a team that could make a play for him. They need a center. They have a lot of room. It's not a great market for unrestricted free agents. And a lot of these teams, that do have space are in a rebuilding mode. I wonder if Phoenix would take a look at him, even if he's not a perfect fit. Phoenix can get cap room by basically waving goodbye to Dario Saric and Aaron Baines, in which case he'd have to be able to play with DeAndre Ayton, though. It's not a clean fit.
Yeah, yeah, that encapsulates some of the issues I see. I agree with you on Charlotte. I think that's one where, especially with his age, they can talk themselves into him, and they also are really bad on offense, so they can talk themselves into him, I think, more, even though they're in a rebuilding mode.
Yeah, and then, of course, you got to look at the Knicks with any big, based on what happened last year, right?
Oh, man. I mean, that can't be right, can it? I mean, they have new management now. They got two bigs who can't shoot already with Randall and Robinson. I mean, Harrell does not strike me as a great.
No, not a good foot there at all. That would be the crazy money.
Yeah, he's really an interesting one. I'm glad we're talking about him first, because let's just go through it here. These are the teams that I project to have more than the mid-level exception available. Mm-hmm. Atlanta leads the pack, $47 million. Charlotte, who you mentioned, about 20 $27 million. And obviously these are subject to changes based on cap holds and guys that they might pick up options or pick up their guarantee. So this is a rough projection here now. Detroit, $35 million. Miami, $26 million. New York has a bunch of team options and 9 guarantees, but could get up to $44 million.
Yeah.
And then Phoenix, 20. Again, as you said, that's a perfect example, right? If they let Baines and Šarić go, then they can get up to $20 million. If they keep those guys, they don't have much.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is interesting because this is something I wrote about for The Athletic this week. A lot of team execs were talking about keeping the cap number at the same number next year and then smoothing in the out years to kind of diminish the effects, the economic effects to the league on the salary cap from all the COVID-19. Now, we'll see. That all has to be negotiated with the Players Association. So we still don't know exactly what we're going to get with.
Yeah.
What we're going to get.
And if that happens, lop $6 million off of all those numbers that I just stated for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Phoenix is probably the one that would be most hurt by that, but and could make it more palatable to just stick with
Baines. I mean, they get through them also by declining Frank Kaminsky's option and Cech Dalos. So that they have some ways to get to probably close to 20. They can get in the market for somebody, but it may not be quite enough to make up for the fact that like they're Phoenix.
Yeah, but they are going to be in an interesting position because they're one of the few teams that is really trying to get a lot better next year and will have above the mid-level exception to spend, you would think. So
you would think, yeah.
Who else do you see as a potential suitor for Harrell? I guess I could see him getting more guaranteed money than some of the guys I have above, but
if
I'm trying to think of where that offer is coming
from. If Christian Wood went to another team, I think Detroit could be a place for Harrell.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting one of whether you'd rather have Harrell or Wood, too. Wood is 24, doesn't have nearly the track record, but he also fits a lot more places with his shooting ability and ability to protect the rim, even if he's an evolving defender.
Yes.
And he can also play next to another big in a way that it's hard for Harrell to do his shooting ability.
Yeah. So I actually had Christian Wood second on my list. Again, I was looking at more guys that I was potentially given multiple years to.
Yeah.
And so some of these veteran guys who might be better in the short term, I couldn't put ahead of him. So I do think Detroit will make an honest effort to keep him, but I do wonder what their walking away number is. He's in a weird situation because his cap hold is so low, but if the Pistons want to use that cap room on other players, they kind of need to keep Wood at about $10 million because once he goes over the league average salary, their cap hold doesn't matter anymore. They have to, his contract number is the thing that counts.
Yeah, although it's hard for me to picture them, especially with the economic uncertainty and where they are as a franchise, really using all of that, like being in a situation that like, okay, we're gonna keep Wood's $1 million cap hold on the books and then we're gonna use up all of our cap space and then sign him to $10 million. So now you're already $10 million over the cap and then you use your room exception and you're like, then you're actually getting to be kind of expensive without necessarily hitting the tax, but
yeah,
they're gonna use long-term contracts there probably. Like I guess I could only see them doing that if maybe some of those contracts they signed were short-term, because they would just be really locked in again to potential mediocrity. I think they'd want to maintain future flexibility.
Well, I mean, their whole history is locking into mediocrity, though.
It seems like they are going in a different direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Post
Blake and with the Drummond trade. Yeah, yeah. I think so too.
Oh no, actually, I maybe you didn't realize this, but Blake Griffin is still on the team. He's still on their books too. He's got $37 million next year and $39 million the year after that. So
could be the largest disabled player exception in league history. Oh no, they cap it at the mid level. That's right.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, but it's a shame, of course, but
yeah,
it's a post Blake era, but oh yeah, they owe him
but he's actually still
$75 million over the next 2 years. So yeah, that's interesting. I mean, Harrell and Wood, if we're thinking about it, of who gets the most guaranteed money, what do you think a contract for Harrell looks like?
I think he's gonna end up he's not gonna get to 20. I think he's like 15.
Like Jonas Valanciunas money, like 3 years, $45 million.
I could definitely see that. Maybe a skosh more than that. Might even get upward toward $50 million. The thing for the Clippers is they can't really lose him because they have they'd have to replace him with the mid-level, I guess, which you can find okay centers for the mid-level, but he kind of fits their team better than a lot of other teams that would be bidding on him.
Yeah, maybe that's true. But yeah, if they could say replace him with Serge Ibaka,
right,
or Derek Favors, would they do that? You think they would rather have those guys on for less money potentially?
I don't know if they're I don't know if they're really worried about the money. I mean, they could be. I mean, if they want to keep Marcus Morris and keep their tax bill somewhat reasonable, because they'd be a luxury tax team, then maybe doing a mid-level guy against instead of Harrell is appealing to them. I think they're just so all in that I'm not sure that matters to them.
Yeah, and they could always, I think it's unlikely to me that he signs a contract that wouldn't be movable either.
Yeah.
And how about Wood? We've talked about him a little bit before. What do you see him getting?
I think he's probably in the same boat. I think there's a little more potential for I just wonder what Charlotte's going to do. Cause that's kind of where like the goofy money could come from potentially if they decide to get in the market for a five. And it might necessarily be after Wood. There's one or two other guys to talk about too.
Yeah. Cause Atlanta already has more fives than they know what to do with. And the Knicks presumably do have that. Phoenix has their five of the future in Ayton already. Miami has Bam Adebayo.
Yeah.
So yeah, Detroit and Charlotte are really your two teams that it seems like could get it into the bidding year. But Wood, I mean, you have to imagine at least he's going to get something around the middle of exception. I mean, I'm thinking kind of in the 30 million guaranteed range for him.
Yeah, 3 times 10, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had, and maybe you've kind of convinced me a little bit here that maybe I should move Harrell up, but I still don't necessarily see him being brought in to start. Whereas Serge Ibaka, Derek Favors, and Andre Drummond has a player option that he's gonna pick up, so we lop him off. But Ibaka, Favors, and Marc Gasol are the other three that I really have in there as like clear starter level of players. And then you've got a bunch of guys below that who are in the high end backup category that we don't need to get into here. But guys who could probably start for you in a pinch: your Robin Lopez, Whiteside, Mason Plumlee, Tristan Thompson type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Ibaka, Favors, Gasol. How do you see their market shaping out?
And I would add Hassan Whiteside to that group too. I think Ibaka is probably the guy because he's the youngest and he's got a little more ability to play four than the others. So it gives you a little more positional versatility. So I think he's the one that'll be the biggest target. I do wonder if Miami could go after him if they miss out on some other guys that we'll talk about when we look at the fours, especially on like a 1 year deal. I just don't know. You know, Toronto's in an interesting situation because they have multiple free agents. They're trying to position themselves with this team next year, because I mean they'll be good, but are they really a contender? So it's an interesting place they're in.
So I've talked about this before, and you wouldn't think it would impact the center market that much, but I think that we may actually have guys waiting to sign, because Miami and Toronto both fall into this boat. I think that players might wait to sign until we find out whether Giannis Antetokounmpo takes the designated player veteran extension or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a great point.
Because take the example of Miami. If Giannis is out there, that's the guy they're in theory going after. You know, you've got Kawhi, you've got Paul George that year too. Toronto very much supposedly talking about going after Giannis. And so Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, could they get more than 1 year with Toronto if the Giannis dreams are dead? Or does Toronto say, hey, we'll give you guys both pretty big 1 year deals to come back and, you know, maybe a non-guarantee on the second year because we're overpaying you for this 1 year? Ibaka probably wouldn't take that. Maybe Gasol would because he's 35.
Yeah, Ibaka's 30. I think Gasol on the 1 year overpay seems like a pretty decent proposition to me.
Yeah. And then Derek Favors, New Orleans probably not going to be in the free agent mix next year, but he could have other options as well in some of these places. And so I think you'll see guys waiting out because they could have a path to more years at above the mid-level exception if Giannis does sign in Milwaukee and everyone has to kind of give up on acquiring him.
Yeah, that could start some more musical chairs going, because for a team, there are other free agents in 2021, don't get me wrong, but I think if you're a team like Miami, you say, okay, well, if he's off the board, then we're probably better off just going win now mode while Jimmy Butler still has his knees functioning, right?
Yeah. So that same thing could affect Danilo Gallinari's market as well.
Absolutely.
Marcus Morris's market potentially, because Miami is a team that, you know, they could potentially get to max space, but they theoretically don't want to go another. It could affect the Chris Paul trade market. There's so many things. I think there's going to be a lot of dominoes relying on Giannis, and maybe I'm overstating in my mind here the amount that teams like Toronto and Miami are are trying to plan for a potential Giannis acquisition in the summer of 2021. But if they're waiting on that, then you could see a lot of delay if he doesn't sign it. If it becomes clear he's not going to sign it,
because the other thing is, how much can you really delay when the off season might only be like a weekend?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if we're looking at starting in late July, finish up by late September, and then they're trying to start everything again by Christmas, yeah, you probably got
not a ton of time to squeeze in a draft in an off season. Yeah, it's going to get interesting. What do you think about Hassan Whiteside? Because that's an interesting one to me. It doesn't really make sense for him to go back to Portland and be a backup, but I'm not sure what his market is either.
Yeah, I think he's, I don't see it being above the mid-level exception. It just depends like what people think of him. I'm lower on him. He's also me 31 already. I didn't have him in my top five. I had Ibaka, Favors, Gasol, Harrell, Wood. Mm-hmm. And I think I would probably have him even below like Robin Lopez or...
Wow.
I think actually like Mason Plumlee or Tristan Thompson might be higher regarded than Whiteside as well. He's just kind of limited. He's kind of a headache. He puts up the stats, but he's can't move at all defensively. Portland's defense has been pretty bad with him this year, though there are plenty of other culprits there as well.
Yeah. Wow. That's
so you feel differently about him?
I mean, he's not anywhere near as good as his stats, but he is hugely productive and a massive rebounder and can, you know, you need somebody who can defend the post when he's on the floor. He doesn't fit in great with like, you know, Portland's like just trapping Lillard, and then, you know, it's Hassan Whiteside on the short roll. Like that's not his deal, right?
Yeah.
So there are limitations to be sure, and he needs to play in a drop coverage. And even then, he's going to go after blocks and kind of not be as good as his numbers again. But like I know he's going to finish the season. I can't say that about Derek Favors, and I know he can play against starters. And I don't know. I think you're giving him short shrift when you start getting into the Lopez's and whatnot of the world.
I think Robin Lopez might be better than him.
Wow.
He does more for your rebounding in terms of his boxing out. He doesn't get as many rebounds, but I think he actually helps your defensive rebounding more. He can stand out in the corner and shoot threes a little bit as well. And he'll be much better for your chemistry.
He has better hair, and he'll be better for your chemistry.
Yeah, he's not going to complain.
I will concede those 2 points.
He's not going to complain if he's not closing games sometimes. About the same age.
Another free agent we should talk about, because he's restricted, but I think he actually might be gettable. And I've wondered about this guy for a team like Charlotte too. That is Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah. As we get into some of these restricted guys, and just to be clear, I think we're talking about kind of, you know, mid-level exception money for most of those guys that we mentioned. And my prediction is that Ibaka, Favors, and Gasol all go back to their incumbent teams on one-year deals for a little bit more than mid-level exception, maybe a lot more in the case of Ibaka.
Yeah. I think that's the safe bet. I actually think, I mean, Wood and Harrell return to their own teams are probably the safe bets there too. Whiteside's probably the most portable guy that we've talked about. I mean, we'll see what happens with it. There's a couple lower level guys like Tristan Thompson, I think, will be on another team too.
That seems likely. Yeah, Poeltl, I've always liked him. I think he's more mobile than people expect. He's a force on the offensive glass. He's got some level of skill as a pick and roll finisher, and he protects the rim pretty well. So I think he absolutely could be a 25 minute a game player. And, you know, sometimes Greg Popovich will just bury guys for no reason. And they also, because of DeRozan having to play to three, everyone got pushed down. So Poeltl couldn't play with Aldridge at all this year. So this role got minimized, but like, he's good. I thought he's solid in the playoffs last year. Yeah. I would absolutely look at signing. You know, you could see him in the Zubats type of range, to, you know, up to maybe $10 million a year or so.
Yeah. So I could see one of these teams dropping a sheet on him and forcing. The Spurs are in a little bit of a tight spot with the luxury tax, especially if the number goes down this year. It won't be an easy decision for them. So I actually am really interested to see what happens there.
And I think he'd actually be a really good fit on a better team. It's just those teams can't kind of wait. I mean, maybe you could see somewhat similar way of it playing out to, you know, Malcolm Brogdon, where if there's a team that's interested in him, maybe they just get the Spurs to drop the qualifying offer, or they can sign and trade him or something like that, you know, on a low level type of asset.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, let's take a quick break here and we'll get to the free agent power forwards. Masterclass has always been one of my favorite sponsors because they just bring a world of knowledge to your fingertips and to your eyes and ears as well. It's exactly what it sounds like. Masterclass. They have masters in their field, whether it's Chris Voss in The Art of Negotiation. That's a new one. They've got Alice Waters right here in my hometown of Berkeley, California, basically started the farm to table movement for cooking. Steph Curry, shooting and ball handling. Serena Williams, tennis. Margaret Atwood. My wife took her masterclass to improve her writing. They have tons of other authors, tons of other cooks, tons of actors, all of them masters in their field. And there's never been a better time to get started. Number one, because you might have a little more time on your hands. But number two, because they have this fantastic deal at masterclass.com/PR, where you get one masterclass all access pass for yourself, and you get another one to share or gift it as well. If you're looking for a gift, maybe for Father's Day, masterclass.com/PR. You get that 2-for-1 offer. Perfect gift for the polymath in your life or someone who really wants to get into a specific field more. Really, whatever level you want to get into it, they really have lessons and worksheets that you can do in a lot of these classes. They've got over 80 plus classes now, and their All Access Pass gets you access to all of them for a year. So once more, that's masterclass.com/PR, easy to remember /PR, because John invented PR, and don't forget that /PR link to let them know that you came from us. Okay, I think we can both agree Anthony Davis is the number one power forward. He's the only player that I
had Dragan Bender number one.
It most likely candidates to play in Europe next year. Is that our list?
Oh, that's not what we're doing?
So I grade things out by superstar, star, starter, rotation, and then fringe. And I'm pretty strict on what I consider a starter as a guy who's really going to get like long-term starter money. Those are the players I look at. But AD is the only superstar. There's only one other guy I had as a star, and that's Brandon Ingram. And then everything else is starter below it, all across all the positions.
Yep, I agree with that.
So I guess the only thing to talk about here is just what does he end up doing? I mean, I think Miami will, of course, try to make him an offer. I doubt that he would accept that, but you know, we'll see how the Lakers season ends, but it seems pretty unlikely that he would accept that. And so the question just becomes, what kind of contract is he going to sign with the Lakers?
Yeah. Do you do it? Does he set it up so that he can go to year 10 and then have the opt out? If you presume that the cap's going to be a little low next year too, probably not great to go long, you know, go out 5 years when you're signing in the low cap year. So I think he has some incentive to do a shorter deal.
Yeah, and it depends how they're going to do things as well. I mean, if there's going to be just some escrow system going forward, maybe he could do it for longer. If just your on paper salaries are going to be in the same range that we're always have been talking about, and you wrote a whole long piece about this of how to do it, but where you're salary on paper is the same, and then you just, if league revenues are lower, everybody loses an equal percentage of their paycheck. So it might make sense for him to re-up on a long-term deal. Rich Paul's style, though, especially for a guy like AD, who's just, you know, in his prime superstar, we've only really seen two superstars do this. One's LeBron and one's KD, and those are guys who, you know, clearly it's like if they tore their ACL, they still would get the contract they wanted after the next year anyway, and AD, to me, falls in that category. So I don't think they'd feel a ton of risk going for even a 1+1 type of deal. And that if you have to opt in again next year, if the cap goes down, you could do that. And then you're at 10 years and you can get the 35% max. So that's probably what I would guess is a 1+1. Maybe you could see a 2+1 instead.
I don't know what he gets out of that. I think the 1+1, and you know, these guys always look like kind of holding the team hostage a little bit too, you know, making sure that they invest in there.
Yeah. And that would also, the 1+1 would line him up with LeBron's potential free agency as well in the summer of 2021. I don't foresee either of those guys going anywhere, but
package deal.
So who is your number two power forward?
Danilo Gallinari. There were two other guys that I think could warrant serious consideration here, but I think Gallinari is the guy who fits best on elite teams because of his ability to shoot from the perimeter, score against switches, can be sort of decent enough against threes and fours, although probably not against any kind of elite ones in a playoff situation. You know, there's definitely a little bit of defensive concern, but offensively, he's such a potent weapon. I think he's the guy. Miami already tried to get him. you know, at the trade deadline. I expect them to try again in free agency. The hangup is going to be on the years, which is why your point about Giannis is so relevant. That's the whole reason that deal blew up in February, was because he didn't want to extend just for 1 year with the Heat. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, that's another one where you're looking at who has the money to sign him above the mid-level. He's clearly worth more than the mid-level. His performance justifies that. I mean, I think he's been making a little over 20, and I think he very easily would deserve it. I mean, I could even see him in a less constrained market somewhere along those same lines again, like 50, 60 million guaranteed over 3 years. You know, right along the line of what he's making. I mean, now he's 31. He's not going to look good at the end of that contract, but that's usually what you'd see guys like him who are good enough now to warrant that, get that type of a contract. But the question then becomes, where is that coming from?
So for Gallinari's market, the other thing that's really interesting to me is, if not Miami, who? How much does Oklahoma City want to bid on him? Is there another team out there that is going to make a plunge for him above the mid-level? And it's so interesting because all these teams that have space are pretty much rebuilding teams, other than Miami, who might only offer him the 1 year. So then, even though you would normally think his market is much better than this, where does he go? The one wild card you could see maybe in this is Phoenix. If they wanted to put another shooter out there at the four, they could probably get to enough money. They would have to let Saric, Baines, and Frank Kaminsky go, and they would have to give up their dream of signing another guard who can dribble. But the Suns, I think, would be the next probably most likely suitor here. I have trouble seeing the Knicks getting in on this, although, I mean, I guess you can't completely write that off.
Yeah, hopefully they're going to have a little bit newer philosophy under Leon Rose, but we say that about every new Knicks president. Yeah, and Phoenix, maybe they could get their point guard in the draft as well. That might be, we'll have to see what happens with the draft. But yeah, Gala is another one where, because of the potential lack of suitors, I could see him returning to OKC. They can pay him more than just about anybody aside from the two teams you mentioned, and they might be able to get him still a little bit below what his market would be in a normal year, and then feel like they can still be decent next year, and then trade him should the opportunity arise.
Just keep him as that trade chip. They have a little bit of a dance with the luxury tax probably, but if it's a number in the teens, it's totally manageable.
Yeah, and that's the other variable we don't know too, is just our teams may not just be the tax for some of these teams anymore either. If they've just lost money, their organization is losing money, they might say, hey, you know what, no, we're gonna have our salary right around the cap, and just to so we're not going to be totally underwater as a franchise because we're not making anything. I think he could be a possibility, which is ironic because he got the contract that he's on now by the same procedure as potential sign and trade.
Yes.
That might be something to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the more creative teams that don't have room, which is like 24 teams, right? but some of the more creative ones are definitely going to be looking at sign and trade alternatives, especially with Oklahoma City and where they're at, going kind of young for old in a sign and trade with Gallinari. I think a lot of teams are going to look at that.
Yeah, and OKC, the construction might be take on our kind of bad contracts and we'll throw in a pick, and then you can give us Gallinari as well. And, you know, if OKC takes on $20 million in bad money for 2021, gets a pick, and they can move Gallinari, then I think they might consider that. Who is your number two on the free
agent? So I had Davis Bertans next. I think Washington is all in on re-signing him. I think this is like the overpay you can see coming from a mile away, maybe. But I think they definitely are pretty strong on keeping him, and it's going to be interesting to see if he can play up to the money he's going to get, because he's such a weapon as a shooter, but you still have to wonder a little bit if he's a long-term starter or what role he really fits in. And I think he's going to get probably like $50 million over three. Would that surprise you?
Yeah, it's so interesting to think of, because the way Washington is building their team, they don't really have a defensive center. Hachimura can't guard anyone. Bertans can't guard anyone, although he tries at least.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he's a good player. You want to retain him. He's 27. He's been a big part of why they were so awesome offensively last year, but it is a little bit harder to build there. I mean, you really need to have a good defensive center if you're trying to go somewhere with him. So yeah, I mean, I think when you consider his youth at 27, when the other players we're thinking about are Marcus Morris is 30. I don't know whether you had him as a power forward or a small forward, but, and Millsap is 35. Those are the other ones that I was considering. Yeah. I could see him getting, Bertans getting more guaranteed money than either of those. I could see maybe Morris getting a little more than him, especially if he's going to return to the Clippers. It just depends, you know, is it going to be a 2, a 3, or a 4 year deal for Marcus Morris at kind of around what he's making now?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, but I see it the same way for you, as $50 million or so for Bertans. Any other suitors that pop up for him?
Again, I mean, could Miami get interested in this? I don't think he quite fits there.
Yeah,
I mean,
they've kind of got Duncan Robinson, who doesn't play the same position, but kind of fills the same role.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a little harder. Now, one of these younger teams that has room could be persuaded to take a flyer on him.
Yeah, Phoenix, you would think, could be in that group.
Yeah, I don't really see a fit with Atlanta. Yeah, I could see Phoenix trying to get in on that. Maybe Detroit?
Yeah. It doesn't seem like the Wiz will want to do a sign trade. It does seem like he's going to go back there, you would have to imagine. Because if you're Detroit, are you really going to break the bank for a 27-year-old who's a good player and probably a starter level of player, but you're not ready to win anytime soon there? So I think Phoenix is the one that I would be most concerned about if I'm Washington, really giving you a big offer that's going to kind of, you know, because if in Phoenix he comes in and he's the clear starter too, and I don't even know if he's going to start in Washington, oddly enough, even though
he might come off the bench again, be with Hachimura there. And do you start Hachimura at 3? Like, I don't know. It's
they don't want to do that. They got Troy Brown at the 3 too.
Yeah, although they have to be reminded of that periodically.
Millsap is an issue.
Millsap.
Should we talk about him?
Yeah. I mean, 1 year deal to Miami makes total sense. Total sense for everything the Heat are trying to do, right? He's a win now guy. You have him for a year. You give him 20 or whatever. That's probably going to be roughly what his market is. Nuggets have some luxury tax concerns. Can't bring back everybody. So I think that's a super interesting one.
That's a nice defensive front line, isn't it? With Millsap, Butler, and Adebayo.
Yeah.
A little light on the shooting there, though. But yeah, Millsap, it's, you know, I don't know if he can play more than 25 minutes a game, which could depress his market a little bit now.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I don't see other teams being like, oh, we got to find $20 million to pay Paul Millsap. But Miami's particular situation is so conducive to that, you know, that I think they could do that. And then I think, you know, you play Derek Jones at the 4 the rest of the time and you're kind of okay.
It might not even take $20 million, frankly, because is Denver really going to go more than a year? And because you mentioned their tax concerns, they've still got Grant as well. They've got to get something at backup center with Plumlee also expiring. So I don't know if they can go $20 million for 1 year.
I don't think they would try to win that by going, you know, 3 years, 40 or something, right?
But like, they got Porter and they got Grant. So over that whole period, you don't necessarily need Millsap.
Yeah, they got some tough decisions coming for sure.
And Phoenix, you would imagine, and I think Colorado has a home court advantage for Millsap as well. So yeah, that'll be interesting. But Phoenix will be in the. I mean, I think Millsap in the short term is a very nice fit next to Ayton for a team that's trying to take a step forward. Millsap's
to me, it makes no sense for Phoenix just to go for that, just to, you know, go for the 8 seed for 1 year. But that logic has never stopped the Suns in the past. So
yeah, and Millsap is also made a lot of money in his career. Like, does he really want to go to Phoenix because they offered him $3 million more a year?
That's a good
compared
point.
To Miami or Denver.
Good point.
So Marcus Morris, I think we got a pretty good line on him. I guess the last guy to talk about probably is Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, because he's got the player option. I still wonder if this ends with an opt-in and extend in Denver. But if not, I do think there'll be a market for him. He's got some positional flexibility, shot the ball pretty decently this year, was playing pretty well when the league shut down. Is he a great player? Is he really a starter? I kind of question that a little, but I do think teams will see that switchability, positional flexibility, and maybe go a little bit above what he's been making if he's an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, just simply the fact that he's 26 too. There just aren't that many unrestricted free agents who are even that young. He may not age that well. He's relying on athleticism. The on-off numbers for him were not that great this year, although, like you said, he shot it a little bit better from 3. It's or more often, maybe, perhaps more accurately. I don't know. I think he probably opts out because it's hard to imagine he doesn't get the same amount for more years, so you might as well.
Yeah.
Is he, but the, I guess the question is, does he want to go back there if he's not going to start, if another team offers him a bigger role? That could be what could lead him to leave. And now we're getting into the level of guys where it's like, hey, tons of teams have the middle level exception.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you sort of know you can probably walk away with that, that you can probably get 3 years, 30, no matter what.
I got a question for you. Would you rather have a healthy Jeremy Grant or a healthy Mo Harkless, who's 1 year older than him?
I might go with Grant. I mean, Harkless is an underrated player. Like I think I wrote recently, like I think the Knicks should be looking at extending him, actually, just to, you know, preserve that trade value. But it's hard to get excited about your future. Like what is he at the end of the day? Is it probably a backup 3-4 in a good team?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, they're both pretty good finishers around the rim. They both can guard out on the perimeter. Grant's got a little bit more rim protection ability.
Yeah.
I don't know who you'd say is the better shooter. It probably just depends which way the wind is blowing and who opened a door in the arena that day. But neither of them are particularly inspiring from that perspective.
Yeah.
Grant has less of an injury history than Harkless. Harkless had those issues with the knees a couple years ago.
Yeah. I do wonder too, you can junk up a game with Grant at five a little better, and Harkless, like, in his, with Harkless with the Clippers, like, he just didn't really, like, fitting him in on a good team was harder than maybe it seemed like it would be.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I think Harkless is a little bit better guarding on the perimeter in a conventional style, getting over screens, than Grant. Grant gives you a little more protecting the rim.
Yeah.
But I think those guys, between those two, if it's between those two and I don't need someone to play backup center a little bit, I probably would just go with whoever's cheaper out of those two guys. Should we move to, well, let's take a quick break first, then we can move to small forwards, unless you had anything else on
power forwards here.
I think all of us are trying to eat more protein right now. I know I have been for a long time. The problem, though, is that protein bars, up until now, let's be honest here, they really don't taste that good. They try to dress them up to make it taste decent, but they've got that chalky flavor. They've got that cement texture. You're chewing on it forever. You got to drink a whole glass of water just to choke one down. With Built Bar, no longer the case. It tastes like a candy bar. 16 amazing flavors, 8 chocolate and nut flavors, 8 chocolate and nut-free flavors. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, but they're still low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. They're peanut butter brownie, 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. As just an example there. So if you're trying to lose weight, protein bars are really the best way to do it. You'll feel full. You won't be as hungry at mealtime. I like to have one before I eat my meal to help me not overeat, feel full faster. It's really a fantastic way to improve your diet and get the protein you need if you're working out. As well, the way to get started with them, builtbar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at builtbar.com. Okay, small forwards. Whew.
Yeah.
Looking a little barren.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's Brandon Ingram here, who's a restricted free agent, and I presume we'll get a max deal from New Orleans.
Yeah, that'll be interesting just to see options. Maybe they can kind of get some likely bonuses in there or something. But you'd have to imagine that Ingram would have an offer sheet available. The only reason he wouldn't have an offer sheet is because everyone knows the Pels will match it. So that's the only thing that could lead to a little bit of leverage from the Pels. But I imagine they're not going to mess around too much on that.
So you look back, if you're the Pelicans, at Gordon Hayward's situation in Utah, where they told him to go out and get an offer sheet. He got a max offer sheet that had a player option after year three. So he was able to leave there after the third year, rather than if they had done it on their own, they probably could have gotten him for 4, I mean, if not 5, sheesh. So the lesson there, I think, is that when you know the guy's going to get a max anyway, just lock him up on your own terms and don't play the whole game, because it can really backfire on you.
Yeah, and you also piss the guy off at the same time. So now he really, not only is the deal shorter, but then he wants to leave when it's over too.
Exactly.
So Hayward is a player option. He almost certainly is going to opt in. Otto Porter is a player option. Almost certainly going to opt in. That leaves us with,
I mean, Marcus Morris is the guy I had at number 2.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about him in the power forwards already. And I think he's got to be going back to the Clippers, it seems like to me.
I would think you don't make a deal like that if you're the Clippers unless you feel pretty strongly that you're going to re-sign the guy and maybe pay a little more to do it. I do think the market is probably pretty favorable for them to do that. They'll have probably some competition from Miami, maybe, especially if they don't get Gallinari or Millsap. But that'll probably be it. None of these rebuilding teams are going to go after Marcus Morris. So if they're willing to do a couple years, even if it's an overpay, I think they're in a window right now where they're willing to do that.
Yeah, and they of course can pay him up to a starting salary of $18 million, 120% of what he made on that 1 year deal that he initially signed with the Knicks. So who's number two for you then?
So after that, the next guy I had on my list was Derek Jones Jr. with Miami.
Yes, 23 years old and he's unrestricted.
Yes. Interesting player for the Heat because I think a lot of their plans depend on re-signing him. They'll have full bird rights. His cap hold's only $1.7 million. So I think at anything up to the mid-level, Miami probably figures that they probably have home court advantage with him, right? Usually a player like that, if you give him what other teams are given, unless he's really upset with you for some reason, which you don't get any vibe about that with Jones, you're going to get him back. So it's going to be hard to go over the top of Miami on this guy, unless you're willing to pay him like 15 and have him be a starter or whatever. I just don't see anyone doing that.
Yeah, the role might be where, because they've got Adebayo, they've been starting two bigs together, so he's not going to start there. They've still got Andre Iguodala for next year. They've got Butler, so there really isn't a starting role for Jones. He plays plenty, and it seems like Miami always has people hurt, so that's a part of how he gets in there. But the other reason I think he might be gettable is if you're willing to go a little bit longer term, does Miami want to tie up that precious 2021 money with a deal beyond going into eight figures for Jones?
I think
in that 2021 season.
I think they can still do it. I think they can still do it and be able to do the max. When you start getting into the guys who are in the 20s, then it gets really challenging. But I think at the type of money Jones is going to make, it seems like they could still do that and accommodate a max contract and not really have to undergo contortions to do it.
Yeah, the other thing for him is he's kind of a four offensively, maybe even almost a five offensively.
Exactly. Yeah, he's a unique player for sure. He doesn't fit in every system. He's not really a shooter. You wonder how his game will develop as he gets older because it's so dependent on his leaping ability, which is freakish. He's good from like the dunker spot or if you have him making cuts or whatever, but you need bigs that can shoot to make that a reality.
Yeah, and his jumper looks like it's coming along a little bit, but the numbers on that were not particularly favorable. Defensively, he can guard just about anyone except maybe a few of the biggest power wings can get him. But like, for example, he was able to guard Pascal Siakam at the end of a game and really shut him down. That looked really good. So
really good at the top of zones and traps too.
Sure. So and also he's only 23. I mean, so you're not as worried about the declining athleticism, at least on this contract, unless you're going, maybe if you're going 4 years, but that's, there are teams that could definitely use him, and any team with a stretch big, I think he really would be excellent. I was thinking actually that like he would look pretty good in, there's a lot of teams he would look good on. But any team with a big you can shoot. I had one and then I forgot who it was, but there
are. What about him in Atlanta?
Yeah. As like some ability to actually stop someone, force some turnovers on the perimeter would be nice. Throw some alley-oops. I mean, he's maybe if they move on from John Collins, Charlotte, he could be a decent fit there.
Yep.
And then the other guy who, I mean, as I mentioned, this isn't a very sexy crop at the three, and this guy is even arguably a four too. Jay Crowder, it's probably going to be an either or with Jones or Crowder for Miami, you would think.
I can guess who's the either and who's the or in that scenario.
Yeah. Well, I think Crowder is actually playing more than him towards the end of the season, although that was 3 months ago. So don't
really. Yeah.
Who else you got here to round out?
So I had, I think this guy could be gettable because of the Nets tax situation. Joe Harris.
Yeah.
He's probably a guy who gets mid-level or more, but there's not that many teams who are in the or more category. So you're probably looking at mid-level, and it's just a question of how far are you willing to go out on him.
Yeah, I think that's one where the Nets, unless again, their willingness to pay has changed. If you give him a deal for a little bit more than anyone else can give him, slightly above the mid-level, and it's a long-term deal, he's only 28 still, and as a shooter, he should age reasonably well. That's always a movable deal later too.
Yeah. Usually in that, those middle class deals, they're actually the grease you need for trades. It's really hard when you do deals, if you're a team and you have like three maxes and all minimums, it's just impossible to do a trade. You kind of need those mid-level, not exactly mid-level, but the middle class contracts between 5 and 15 million. Those are how you put deals together.
The last guy I wanted to mention in this group is Glenn Robinson III. I know you're lower on him than I am, but while I was trying to stay awake at Warriors games this year, I did see him play pretty well.
Okay.
I think his shot has come along. He can passably defend a lot of positions, still athletic enough to get out on the break, although he's not quite the Skywalker he was when he was in dunk contests. Still only 26. I think a guy who's a clear rotation player. Maybe not in the mid-level exception, but I think certainly for the mini mid-level type of range. And I like him a little bit more than some of these. I mean, again, it's a very, very limited group here at the three.
Yeah, you look at, you know, Justin Holiday, Josh Jackson, Harkless, those kind of guys.
But I think he could actually start for you at the three and like not absolutely kill you where on either end, whereas I don't think that really describes many other people in this group right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, and just to get competence on both ends is a rare commodity in this free agent.
He could make a lot of sense for the Hawks.
Yeah, I agree with you. Any more on the threes, or should we talk about the twos?
I think we can move on to the twos, which this guard market is not a looker.
Yeah, so DeRozan is going to opt in at age 30. Almost certainly he's making like high 20s. Fournier is someone that you and I have talked about a lot on this show. Yeah. I mean, clearly, I think most guys are going to move more towards opting in these circumstances. I don't see the team out there that, even though he's 27, is going to give him much more than the mid-level, even though I think he's worth it. And so he's 17.5 this year. You think he opts in unless he wants to go for more security from the Magic?
Yeah, so there's two guys really here worth talking about that are almost birds of a feather, who are Evan Fournier and Tim Hardaway, who will definitely be the top two free agent shooting guards if they indeed become free agents. And it's an interesting calculus for them, because there aren't many room teams, as you pointed out. I do think the Hawks would be willing to pay a good wing, as long as it's somebody who's in his 20s. And so I think that's one angle. The Hawks will have more cap room than anybody. But this is where a good agent can really help you, because you're not supposed to negotiate before free agency begins, and I certainly would never have done this in Memphis. But what a good agent can do is get in touch with teams and suss out what the market is going to be, who are the suitors, and what are the price points, and figure out.
In a general sense, of course, not any.
No, of course not. You would never make a specific offer before July 1st. That would be unthinkable.
You leave out how many cents you're gonna include in the offer. It's not a done deal. It's all just the outlines of a deal. Closing in on a deal.
Yeah, there you go. So they're probably gonna know before they make their decision to opt out what their deal is going to look like. And it could lead again to another deal where it's opt in plus extend, because a good agent again would be talking to Orlando too and saying, well, if I opt out, I can get, 23 from Phoenix. But if you guys will match that, he's willing to stay here, in a hypothetical conversation that of course never happened with us.
I did hear something in all seriousness on that. I don't know if this has come up in any discussions you've had, that this year, number one, there's no combine. Number two, the league has these strictures now where they're able to look at phones and stuff to see if there's tampering before the official deadline. And so what I was told is, at least this agent said that people from teams are reticent to discuss stuff. And he was having a little bit harder of a read than usual figuring out where his client was. But this is, this is back a couple months ago.
Yeah.
But without the ability to talk in person now due to the pandemic, even on the phone, he said that teams were kind of reticent to have the same level of conversations that they had had before.
Yeah.
And there's only one person who told me this, but have you heard anything along those
lines? No, I mean, the phone police are definitely going to be a problem that we never had to deal with. So that could be a game changer. And I also think there's a sense among teams that if you're going to get busted, don't do it over Evan Fournier, right? get busted trying to get Giannis, So I do think teams will probably play it a little closer to the vest, more by the book, this off season because of that.
Yeah. I mean, and even on a phone call, like I think whenever these new rules come into place that everyone's going to be more conservative until they kind of see how it plays out. But on a phone call, you can't prove anything unless there's not going to be, nobody's required to record their phone conversation. Simply the fact that you had a phone conversation and then, you know, you might get asked about what you said in that phone conversation on June 25th with this guy's agent is probably the worst that's going to happen. But also like none of these other teams are going to be like pushing a tampering investigation over like Evan Fournier or something either. So
that's true.
These are all kind of lower stakes. And I like, frankly, once the team season is over, like I never cared that they did that. Did you care like that other teams did that once the season was over?
Once the season was over, I did not.
Yeah.
That's a very clear line in the sand though. If we're still playing games, then that's complete breach of protocol.
Yeah. That to me is fair, but you know, once the season's over, like if people like trying to figure out whether you're going to opt out or not, or like to grease the skids in that way, like I think that's just important for everybody's sanity to me, like just to make better decisions, like having that a little more efficiency in the market is a good thing for both players and teams in the end.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that plays out. The restricted free agent shooting guards.
Good crop.
Yeah. This is really the only position where you'd expect that to be significant. I think there's three pretty good restricted free agents out there.
Yeah.
At shooting guard.
Which one do you have at the top?
Clearly Bogdanovich would be the one. He and Fournier, very similar situations, except very similar players, except Fournier is obviously going to be unrestricted.
Yeah.
Seems like the Kings have signaled to everyone that they're going to match with some of the machinations they made financially at the deadline to get off of some money for next year with the Dedmon trade.
I certainly see that happening as well. Similarly, I see Malik Beasley going back to Minnesota after what they gave up to sign him. And I have a hard time seeing another team being so enraptured with him that they're going to really push the limit on what Minnesota's willing to go to there. I see something like, I don't know, 4x11, 4x12, something like that. They'll go above the mid-level and then, you know, probably try to go out 4 years just to have him locked up.
That's for Beasley. Yeah, that'll be an interesting one because he turned down the 3 for 30. Then he didn't have a good year. That's a minus. But he got traded to Minnesota and had 7 good games. That's a plus.
Yeah.
And but, you know, the entire world economy is tanked. That's a minus. So how does that all affect those numbers? Yeah, I think, you know, low teens, 3-4 years seems about right for me.
Mm-hmm.
Over 15 would be a pretty good job by his agent, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But Bogdanovich, what do you see as the numbers on him?
I think he's probably like 15, something like that. Maybe 45 over 3.
I think the Kings would be ecstatic if they got him for that.
Really?
Well, I'm not saying it won't happen, but I'm saying that it just compared to what they probably thought they were looking at for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bogdanovich, does he have suitors?
It's tough. It's, you know, does Charlotte look at him as a guy? I mean, Atlanta could definitely use him. I think they would like somebody who was more of a defender, probably.
He defends pretty well for a two.
I mean, I could see New York maybe going after him, although I think they really want to keep their powder dry for 21 as well.
Yeah, I don't know if there's really a fit in Phoenix. I mean, I guess he could come off the bench. He could play the three against teams that didn't really have a great wing.
Phoenix is spending money on a guard, it's somebody who can play the one.
Yeah, he gives you, like, he could be a pick and roll guy, though. I think, like, he's maybe not, you know, he and Booker, could they play together as in the backcourt? Somebody has to guard the one. That would be a problem.
Not to mention guard the two.
Bogdanovich is good. I think he's actually a good defender. I think he tries hard. Right. He's I think he gets a little bit of the European white dude stigma that he doesn't deserve. I think he actually can be feisty.
All right. Well, he does have long arms, so that helps. What do you think D'Anthony Melton gets?
Yeah, you know, I think you wrote about him a little bit. You were thinking something along the lines of the mid-level exception, right, in your Memphis piece?
Yeah.
That seems high to me.
Okay.
Just based on the history of guys who've really only been bench players, second round guy as well. Like, there's just, they still maintain that stigma to some degree. I'm thinking it's going to be more in the 5 or 6 million per year.
Wow.
Which it might be a pretty good deal. That but it just, be, the yeah. history of guys like him, it just, like, you and I are probably higher on him than most. Also, the fact that he doesn't really shoot it very well at the two makes him a little bit of a tough fit. But, but it, you know, I think most teams just like, you offered how much for this guy who's a second round pick and he's played, you know, 800 minutes last year or something like that? Like, it doesn't go that well, it seems like, a lot of times for like just the PR aspect of that. It scares off a lot of teams. I think teams should be more aggressive in those situations, but the history to me kind of shows that they aren't.
Yeah, by far the youngest free agent that you could plausibly sign this year. So that's another angle with him. Who's the best unrestricted free agent at shooting guard? If Fournier and Hardaway opt in.
KCP also has a player option.
That was my guy. Yeah.
I mean, Avery Bradley also has one. I mean, then you're down to Alec Burks and Jordan Clarkson. Justin Holiday has been kind of underrated.
Yeah, I had him with the threes. He had a good, he didn't shoot well for us in Memphis at all, but he's played really well in Indiana this year. I think he's had a good year. And Indiana is in a situation because they're pretty close to next year's tax line where it's not cut and dried that they could just keep him. So I think he's an interesting guy. But again, we're talking about mid-level money or less there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, but and they don't have really much in the way of bird rights on him either, because they just signed him for the room exception this year.
Exactly.
But and he's 31. He's older than you think. He kind of bounced around a lot in Europe before he caught on with the Warriors. But yeah, I mean, that he really is impossible to screen. He's gotten stronger to where he's not, you can't just totally run him over. Now he's skinny, but he's got that functional strength.
Super durable.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of in the same, GR3's got a little more size, but it's kind of in the same mode as him to me. Mm-hmm. All right, should we finish up here with the point guards? This isn't going to take long.
this is a bummer of a point guard class. I see one guy who is a potential start. Mike Conley, first of all, is a player option that there's no chance he's opting out of. So the one guy who's a starter I think would be a target for a couple teams is Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, I've probably, of all the players that are free agents this year, I've probably been asked what I think he's going to get more than just about anybody.
Yeah, and I think the answer is going to surprise people. I think the first digit on his contract might be a 2. And I say that because Phoenix is looking for a guard. I think the Knicks would like a point guard. I think Detroit, who doesn't have a point guard and is coached by Dwayne Casey and has all this money, I think they're going to be a serious suitor. And then obviously Toronto has an incentive to keep him. And if they have him at a number that's around 20, they probably still can make the math work on a Giannis pursuit a year later. That's assuming one of Ibaka or Gasol comes back on a one-year deal. So he's going to have a lot of traction as far as building up his market, because there's going to be teams bidding against each other for him, I think.
Yeah, it's really interesting because he fits so many places due to his ability to defend either guard position and even switch a little bit. He can shoot off the ball. He can run some pick and roll for you. Can't finish at the rim, but it's enough to kind of get you into your offense, especially on backup units. He's good in transition, pushing the ball. So he's got a lot of things to like. Only 26, another one of the younger unrestricted free agents that you're going to find. Yeah. It seems like he would probably go back to Toronto, especially because, you know, they've got Kyle Lowry as well, but Lowry is older and he expires after 21. And
well,
so
his contract does.
Thank you.
No, I agree with you though. VanVleet going back to Toronto still makes the most sense to me. There's always the looming threat of like the batshit offer from the Knicks or something where that Toronto just says, oh, whoa, we're not doing that.
Well, so what's your walkaway number if you are Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster and company in Toronto?
I think when you start getting into like 24 a year, right? And especially if there's a fourth year on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Fred. It's been real.
Can't get that much, though.
Yeah. Right?
compare him to like Brogdon. That's like what Brogdon got. It's more than Brogdon got.
Yeah, exactly.
In a market that was more player friendly.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think there's when you start getting to 2021, I think they start getting really squeamish. I think once you start pushing past that, especially if there's a fourth year, if there's other stuff that isn't friendly in there, it's like, you know what? Like we'll make other plans. It's fine.
The thing about Van Vliet to me is, I think if you're got a team that's ready to win and you have another really good perimeter creator, he fits in really well. Maybe you could argue that he puts you over the top. But if you're a team, and maybe Phoenix is just this insane, but you know, they still have Rubio. If you're a team that's bad, getting a 26-year-old where you're kind of wasting his first couple of good years, like, he's not putting you in the playoffs.
Yeah.
If you're a Charlotte or a New York type of team.
Yeah. So the blessing for Phoenix, I think, is they probably don't have quite enough money to really blow him away.
And they also have other needs too.
Yeah, and they might need to get a four, and I would argue that's probably more important for them, especially with all the guards available in the draft this year. So, which takes us to my best candidate for a crazy free agent offer would be Phoenix completely overpaying Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah, who's Larry Bird isn't there anymore. The points per game brigade looks like Scott Perry isn't going to be the lead decision maker with the Knicks anymore. There aren't really that many executives left anymore who just are like, oh, points per game. Good, sign me up.
Yeah, Clarkson did have a good year this year, especially offensively.
He's a good six-man scoring guard for sure. Yeah, you know, I think he's mid-level exception type offers would be reasonable for him, depending on the team.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do wonder if he'll end up getting more than that. It's weird because Phoenix could be a mid-level exception team still. Like, they could just bring back Bane, Sarge, Kaminsky, and then use their mid-level exception on a guard. And that's not an unreasonable thing when you look at this market. But I just don't know if that's the direction they're going to go.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Šarić at all as a restricted free agent among
the bigs. And it's possible they don't qualify him if they want to be a room team.
Yeah, yeah, or that they pull it. Yeah, I think that's probably good. You can do that unilaterally. I think up to July 13th is the new number.
Yeah, they'll have to invent a new date for that, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah. What else at point guard here as we wrap it up?
So,
it's
two guys.
Much all backups now, right?
Yeah, two guys that I wrote down. I mean, Chris Dunn is an awesome defensive player. He's a restricted free agent. There are certain teams where he maybe fits if you have other ball handlers and he can just be a bulldog defender that you throw out there against everyone. And then the guy who was kind of sneaky good, especially right before the league shut down, was Michael Carter-Williams. But again, yeah. Are you going above the, you know, are you giving Michael Carter-Williams, you know, 30 over 3? No. So.
No, it seems to me, I mean, maybe, you know, a Dragic could get 1 or 2 years at the mid-level. Maybe you could see that for him. Because I think when he's healthy, I think he actually does make a difference. Still, he's another guy where it'll be interesting whether he goes back in Miami or not. Any cap space they might have would be...
Yeah, that would kill it. That would kill it. I mean, their cap scenarios depend on him leaving.
Yeah, unless they brought him back for the room exception, that'd really be the only way.
Yeah.
So, and I think he can still really help a team in 25 minutes a game as a backup guard. And he was closing games for them. He still knows how to play. Like he's got that, still got that brain. He shot it well from three. That's anybody really. DJ Augustin is out there too as a potential backup. I mean, these guys are 32.
Shabazz Napier, Reggie Jackson. I mean, it gets rough out there quick.
I mean, I guess the good news is part of the reason there aren't that many point guards on the market is because most of the point guards are still under contract for next year, and therefore teams don't have as huge of a need at that position.
Yeah. Going to be quite a few guards coming into the league as well, if you look at the draft. Pretty guard heavy.
What do you see as a reasonable offer for Dunn? I mean, it's not going to be more than the mid-level, but there could be teams who could offer something in that range. I think he's below the Tyus Jones, Dalon Wright, 3 years at the mid-level that we saw last year.
Yeah. Would you give him the taxpayer mid-level is around six. He's I think he's certainly worth that, wouldn't you say?
Depends on the team.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Chicago just bring him back for around that amount of money.
That's true too. I mean, that's a reasonable scenario for the Bulls. I mean, whether they qualify him is going to be a little bit interesting because his numbers high enough that it's not inconsequential.
But they're not really going to be a cap space.
It doesn't impact their. Yeah. As I looked, I just pulled up their sheet. You're right. They can still use their full mid level, make their first round pick and have his qualifier on the books. And it doesn't do them any harm at all. So, yeah. So you're probably looking at a restricted scenario then. So, yeah. 2 years, 13, 14 million, something like that.
Yeah, that might even be a little high. But I guess it's just, you know, if you think about it in terms of guaranteed money, I'm thinking, you know, 15 million guaranteed, whether that's over 2 years or three. That's kind of where I would be for him. All right, this is fun. I'm still just fascinated to see where it plays out. But I mean, the number one lesson here is just, so the mid-level, like that's where we are on so many of these guys. But I guess the good news you would say if you're a team is there aren't that many guys who are worth that much more than the mid-level either.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually going to be a chore for a team like Atlanta to find ways to positively use the space they have.
Who would be your number one target if you were Atlanta that you could realistically get?
What I would try to do is get Ingram to sign a short offer sheet, and hope that I could get him back out on the market in the future and do a favor that way. But failing that, I mean, who's the guy who fits where they are? You know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is interesting to me because they need a defender on the wing. They need a guy who's just going to shoot threes and doesn't need to do anything else. And he fits that. He's from Georgia. He won't be that expensive. He's still fairly young. Like, he checks a lot of the boxes in terms of what they're looking at, even though it's not super sexy. Because otherwise, like, these other players they could potentially sign, they're going to have to go way overboard in order to get them, right? Like, could you get Malik Beasley? Yeah, but you're going to have to sign a ridiculous offer sheet that you just end up regretting a year later. So does that really advance the ball for you? And I have trouble coming up with other guys here that really do that for them. I do think they're going to spend some money at the point guard spot too. So that could be interesting. You know, would that be a situation where Dragic fit, where it's like, look, you're going to play 20 minutes behind Trae Young. We run pick and roll on every single play. So, you'll be able to have the ball and do stuff, but, get them a veteran point guard who could prevent the sky from falling when Trae checks out of the game.
Yeah. I like Caldwell Pope. Like, he might be, assuming he opts out, he might be my number one target there. Maybe Bogdanović would be the other one.
Yeah. But again, you gotta do something for Bogdanović that once you get a couple years out and you have Trae on a max and you extend Collins or whatever, that, you know, how are you feeling about that number then?
Yeah, you could also just see them try to get, you know, maybe they go Jay Crowder and GR3 and just get a bunch of outs at the wing position. And just if one of those guys can defend and shoot, then they can compete with Hunter and Reddish.
Yeah.
And they got center taken care of, backup point guard.
And second string center, third string center, and fourth string center are pretty much taken care of too.
Yeah, Jones Jr. maybe could be up there as well. And you just hope that you can continue to teach him to shoot, but he gives you more athleticism on the wings.
Yeah, see, I think you could sign Jones, play him as a backup four, but maybe finish some games with him and have him out there with Dedmon at the five. And then like that, you know, that can work.
Yeah, I mean, he would be a fantastic role man for Trae Young.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it's not a great year to have $47 million in cap space in the end, especially because they've now already taken care of center, which is the one place where there actually is some kind of depth.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if they use it. I think they're going to use some of it on players because they do want to make the playoffs, but I still think they could use a portion of it just getting paid in draft picks to take on a dead body.
Yeah. And that there may be options for that now just due to the financial considerations,
yeah,
not necessarily the tax considerations for some of these teams. And, you know, they could always go 1 year deals and try to run it back in the summer of 2021 as well. I mean, maybe you go one big deal for a guy that you think could be a starter for you, fill in the rest of it on kind of 1 year deals or taking on bad money. And then you repeat in the summer of 2021, hopefully looking a lot better, having made the playoffs and teams are, and you look like a better destination that summer. All right. Let's get out of here. What did you write about for The Athletic this week before we go at theathletic.com/PER, by the way, is how you sign up for that.
Yeah. So I took a look at every single team in the league and what the implications would be for a lowered cap number and luxury tax number for those teams. And so I went through all 30 of them, put them in different groups. So that's out there. And then got a couple more exciting things I'm working on for this week, working on a piece on the Clippers, working on a piece on the Celtics, and that hopefully will be out by midweek.
Yeah. John and I will be back next Sunday. We're going to do a bunch bunch of film review. I actually put a lot of work in over this week. Surprise topic. Once we actually finish that work and I know for sure we're going to do it, I will, I'll tweet out what that topic is. Stay tuned for that. It should be a fun one. I haven't seen anybody else do this one, which is, that's always good considering that pretty much every basketball topic has now been exhausted during this.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We'll talk to you all next week. Till then.